This morning we're going to continue on with the idea of stewardship. And we're going to be looking particularly in the Old Testament. And just a reminder, when we talk about stewardship, what is it? It's this idea of supervising or caring for something that doesn't belong to us. Right? So it could be like an organization, property, or something like that. So what I want to do is I want to go through some of the Old Testament passages and just consider how this idea of stewardship comes up. So looking at things like their land, the treatment of the poor, just the idea of rest, the priesthood, and just things like ownership, and particularly with things like slaves, land, etc., and just dealing with others like strangers and even business dealings. I'm going to start in Genesis. And you might think that's a obvious place to start. But if we just think about, because you'll see the relevance of this as we go through. So let's just start with Genesis 1, and we're not going to read the whole of Genesis 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light, and that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. He called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. Then God said, "Let there be firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament, divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And so it was. And God called the firmament heaven. So the earth and the morning were the second day. And he goes on and talks about all of the days of creation. But central to it and firmly in the center of it all is God in this creation process. And then he gets to man and he's picking it up in verse 26 of Genesis 1. Then God said, "Let us make man in our own image, in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "See, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, for you it shall be for food. Also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food." And it was so. Then God saw that everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day. And so you have this picture, basically, of God creating the universe. And then specifically talking about the world and all of the components. And I've skipped over a whole bunch where he talks about the animal creation and all of that. But the idea that man was then sort of set above that. But central to it was, and if we have to use the word ownership, God created it. And therefore owns it. And he made humans, and he sort of gave it to us to manage. It's interesting because when ownership is an important thing in the worldview. You think about it, we have bits of paper that say which bits of land we own. And some people are even trying to sell off bits of the moon to claim that they own that bit or whatever. And generally the idea is, well, if it's mine, it's mine, and you can't have it, and I can keep it, right? You can't take it away from me. It doesn't always work, but that's the theory. Now we come on to the nation of Israel itself. And we're going to start with Abraham. So we're going to pick it up in Genesis 12. Then the Lord, he said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. And you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, as far as the terebinth tree of Moreh. And the Canaanites were then in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your descendants I will give this land." And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. And he moved from there to the mountains east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west of Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. So Abraham journeyed, going on still towards the south. And to summarize the story, he then goes on, and we end up with the sons, the grandsons, and eventually Egypt. And then Moses comes along and delivers them out of Egypt. And that's where we pick it up after a little bit with Joshua and the land. And notice again, this is Joshua as he's about to enter that land that Abraham was promised. He says, and it's picking up in verse 2 of Joshua, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites to the great sea towards going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go." So basically what we have is the history of how Israel ended up in the land of Israel. It was from a promise given to God, or by God, to Abraham. And then Joshua had the job of leading the people into the land, and also as part of God's plan for punishment for those who were currently there. And notice the blessing still call going on of, "I will bless you, right, if you're obedient to the commands that I gave." Okay. So you think, what's all that got to do with stewardship? Let's pick it up in some of the instructions that were given to Israel. And the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I will give you, that land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather its fruit. But in the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord, which shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard, which grows of its own accord." what grows of its own accord, of your harvest, you shall not reap, nor shall you gather the grapes of your unattended vine. For it is a year of rest for the land. And the Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you, for you, your male and female servants, your hired servants, and the stranger who dwells with you. For your livestock and the beasts that are in your land, all its produce shall be for food. 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its produce, but the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow. The poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field may eat. In like manner you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove. 6 days you shall do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your female servant and the stranger may be refreshed. Notice how he starts off when he's giving him instructions about these. When you go into the land that I am giving you, this is how you are to operate. And one of the things you notice in there is that their working day, if you like, God specifies how this is going to work. And for each person, they were supposed to rest on the seventh day. Even the slaves and the animals got the day off. And likewise, when it came to the land itself, the land also got a year off. So the idea was that they simply just left it for the year. So for one whole year, they did nothing to it. You didn't harvest, you didn't plant. So basically, it had the year off. But it wasn't just that the land was hard working and it needed a day off, or a year off. Notice as well what was intertwined with this. And that is, in that Sabbath year, the idea is whatever grows, it's to be food, but not just for you, but for others as well. And it talks about your slaves, your hired workers, as well as the domestic or wild animals. They can eat whatever grows there. But notice it says that you can eat from it, but not harvest. So the idea is you didn't go out there in one big go and gather it all. You just left it and you just picked as you went. And the poor also got to eat from it. So this idea was that it became, for the seventh year, an opportunity for anybody who had need could then go and just take from the various fields. Right? Rather than, well, it's my land and I'm going to plow it for 7 years and I'm going to get everything. You only got to do that for the 6 years. And also notice implies that they had to trust God. Because what's the obvious question that comes up? In year six, how am I going to survive until year eight? Because I can't plant anything. I can't harvest anything. So there was an implicit trust built in. You had to trust God and do it His way. In Leviticus 25, and you'll find a lot of this is from Leviticus 25 and 19. If one of your brethren becomes poor and falls into poverty among you, then you shall help him, like a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with you. Take no usury or interest from him, but fear your God that your brother may live with you. You shall not lend him your money for usury, nor lend him your food at a profit. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field. Shall not reap the corners of your field when you reap, nor shall you gather any gleaning from your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of the field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape from your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God. And if a stranger dwells with you in the land, you shall not mistreat him. The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you. And you shall love him as yourself, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. You shall do no injustice in judgment. In measurements of length, volume, and or weight or volume, you shall have honest scales, honest weights, an honest ephah, an honest hin. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Even in these instructions, notice that God is using their history to instruct them. You understand what it's like to be a slave in another country, to be mistreated. So therefore, when you're in your country that I've given you, I want you to think about this. When you plow, you don't go right to the edges. When you pick your fruit, you don't take it all. whether that's grapes or olives or whatever it is. Why? Because it was a built-in mechanism to make sure that the poor get fed. And when someone falls into hard times, notice what it says. Take him in. Don't give him food at a cost where you're making a profit. Don't charge him interest. But rather, it's like treat him as a brother. And notice as well, you didn't go and give a handout. The poor still had to go and harvest it or gather it themselves. Yes, it was there on the edge of the fields, but they had to go and get it. Yes, it was still there in the vineyards, but they had to go and pick it up or pick it. And even down to people, when you were strangers in your land, you had to treat them well. And again, that reference back to your history. And remember always that you were slaves in Egypt and I gave you this land. And this is how I want you to behave in this environment. And notice as well, even in your business dealings, you had to be honest. So your weights and measures had to be accurate. The things that you measure, like your big bushels for measuring your grains, they had to be accurate as well. In Leviticus 25:8-12, and it says this, and you shall count 7 Sabbaths of years for yourself, 7 times 7 years, and the time of the 7 Sabbaths of years shall be to you 49 years. Then you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement. You shall make the trumpet to sound through all of your land. You shall consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all of the land to its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you, and each of you shall return to his possession, and each of you shall return to his family. That the 50th year shall be a jubilee to you. In it you shall neither sow nor reap what grows of its own accord, nor gather the grapes of your untended vine. For it is the jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You shall eat its produce from the field. In this year of Jubilee, you shall return to his possession. Each of you shall return to his possession. And if you sell anything to your neighbor or buy from your neighbor's hand, you shall not oppress one another according to the number of years after the Jubilee. You shall buy from your neighbor, and according to the number of years of crops, he shall sell to you. According to the multitude of years, you shall increase its price. And according to the fewer number of years, you shall diminish its price. For he sells to you according to the number of years of the crops. Therefore you shall not oppress one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. So you shall observe my statutes and keep my judgments and perform them, and you shall dwell in the lands in safety. Then the land will yield its fruit, and you will eat your fill and dwell there in safety. And if you say, what shall we eat in the 7th year, since we have not sown nor gathered in our produce? Then I will command a blessing on you in the 6th year, and you will bring forth produce enough for 3 years. And you shall sow in the 8th year and eat old produce until the 9th year, until its produce comes in. You shall eat of the old harvest. The land shall not be sold permanently, for the land is mine. For you are strangers and sojourners with me, and in the land of your possession you shall grant redemption of the land. Now this was what they call the year of Jubilee. And the idea was that everything reverted back to that original division. So all the land went back. So when you sold land, you only sold it until the year of Jubilee. So the idea then was that not only was it an extra Sabbath year, but all of those debts were then cancelled. And again, notice all of that produce from that year was basically the same as the Sabbath year. So every 50 years you had like this reset. Slaves and prisoners would be freed. The only exception, by the way, was foreigners. They were the only ones that you could actually hold on to. And debts would be forgiven. And the mercies of God would be particularly manifest. So no sowing, no reaping for how many years? Because you didn't get to eat until the ninth year, after the sixth year. So again, you're relying upon the mercy of God, trusting in God that he's going to provide. And it's quite countercultural in our society, because I think the ACT is about the only thing that sort of got something where we sell you the land, but we don't really. We actually give you a lease. We still hold on to it. All right? And in a sense, that's what God's doing here. It's like 50-year lease, reset. 50-year lease, reset. But always the land belongs to God. And what if one of you who dwells by you becomes poor and sells himself to you, you shall not compel him to serve as a slave. As a hired servant and a sojourner, he shall be with you and shall serve you until the year of Jubilee. Then he shall depart from you, he and his children with him, and shall return to his own family. He shall return to the possession of his fathers, for they are my servants whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. They are not to be sold as slaves. You shall not rule over them with rigor, but you shall fear your God. As for your male and female servants whom you have, from the nations that are around you, from them you will buy male and female slaves. Moreover, you may buy the children of strangers who dwell among you, and their families who are with you, which they beget in your land. And they shall become your property, and you may take them as an inheritance for your children after you, and inherit them as a possession that shall be your permanent slaves. But regarding your brethren, the children of Israel, you shall not rule over one another with rigor. And notice again this idea of even if your neighbor falls on hard times and has to sell himself to you as a slave, you're not to treat them as such. Even though it's only till the year of Jubilee, you're to treat them as a hired servant. The only exception was foreigners. So again, this idea of God's people, God wanted them to be treated in a particular way. And so, fellow Israelites always had to be treated well. Now, that doesn't mean that you had a license to mistreat other slaves, but the idea is you couldn't take an Israelite as a slave at all. They were always to be thought of as hired servants until the year of Jubilee. Okay, and in fact, they could even be redeemed by other members of the family. In Deuteronomy 14, he says, "You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that your field produces year by year. And you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide. The tithes of your grain and your new wine and your oil. Of the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. But if the journey is too long for you, so that you are not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you, then the Lord your God has blessed you, where the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for the money, take the money in your hand, go to the place where the Lord your God chooses, and you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep or wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires, you shall eat before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. You shall not forsake the Levite who is within your gates, for he has no part nor inheritance with you. And at the end of every third year, you shall bring out the tithe of your produce for that land and store it up within your gates. Then the Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates may come and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands which you do." In the tithing, the idea of, and notice as well that the firstborn belonged to God of the herds and the flocks. But the idea was that 10% of everything went to God. And for years 1, 2, 4 and 5, you and the Levites gathered all that, went to a certain place that God told you, and you feasted, including the Levites, etc. For years 3 and 6, that stuff was gathered together and put in a store. And that store was to feed orphans, widows, strangers, Levites, etc. Leviticus 7. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, he who offers the sacrifice of this peace offering to the Lord shall bring his offering to the Lord from the sacrifice of his peace offering. His own hand shall bring the offerings made by fire to the Lord. The fat with the breast he shall bring, and the beast may be waved as the waver offering before the Lord. Then the priest shall burn the fat on the altar, but the breast shall be Aaron and his sons. Also the right thigh you shall give to the priest as a heave offering from the sacrifices of your peace offerings. He among the sons of Aaron who offers the blood of the peace offering and the fat shall have the right thigh for his part. For the beast of the waver offering and the thigh of the heave offering I have taken from the children of Israel, from the sacrifices of their peace offerings, and I have given them to Aaron the priest and to his sons among the children of Israel by a statute forever." And again, so you have this idea that part of the sacrifice process was the, if you like, the way of providing for the high priest and his sons, etc. So one of the things, what do we gain out of this? Apart from the fact there's a whole lot of rules and regulations. When you think about the way God dealt with Israel, within the society that he was constructing, there was this idea that the land doesn't belong to you. I have lent it to you. You are to then for not use it just for your own interests, but for yourself and for others. And that includes those who are strangers in the land. And God makes reference to them and says, you too are strangers and sojourners with God. And there's this constant reminder that it belongs to God. And yet within that, in things like the tithes, the land, and also in the Sabbath years, there was this whole provision for dealing with those who were poor. And even the dealing with the mercy of, you know, undoing all those land sales and all the debts and everything else. And again, the idea was, it's not yours to keep, it's God's. So, in then thinking about it, this is God's property. We're to care for it, we're to use it, but we're also, God has built in other things, like those rest years. And that's to care for the people themselves. And remember, those who fall on hard times, you were to treat as brothers. You invite them into your house. You feed them without charging them exorbitant prices, taking advantage of their situations. So in a sense then, God is building a sense of community by the instructions that he's giving. Not in a sense, he is. That you are to care about the other people who are around. It's to be part of your daily thinking in how you go about operating in this environment. Both in your work, in your harvest, and how you conduct business. And the wealthier then to leave for the poor. The Levites are paid or sort of provided for by the sacrifices, the tithes, and everything else. And in God's hand is in all of this by that idea that you need to trust in God. Because you are going to be called to do nothing in your land every 7 years. And in fact, every 50 years, do nothing for several years. So they got that constant trust reminder for God.